In March of 2018, an SUV with two adults and six children went off a cliff along the Pacific Coast Highway. Investigators determined that it was murder-suicide. Many of the subsequent news stories were about the adults, Jennifer and Sarah Hart. They were a white lesbian couple who had adopted the six black children from two families in Texas. But Houston reporter Roxana Asgarian sought out the birth families of the six children, and her book focuses on why the kids were removed and adopted. She discovered a flawed and overburdened child welfare system that continually shortchanged black families. She's now published the book, We Were Once a Family, and Roxana Asgarian joins me now to talk about it. Welcome, Roxana.
Thanks for having me.
The book started as a newspaper assignment when you were dispatched to find the birth parents of the dead children and get their perspective right after it happened. How, or actually maybe why, did that one assignment turn into this book?
I knew immediately when I was let into the homes of the birth family of three of the kids that this was a child welfare story, and it seemed increasingly clear as time went on that the systemic part of the story was being totally overlooked.
Because there was a lot of coverage at the time, but it all really like focused on the adoptive mothers and why they did this.
Yes, exactly. It was unclear in the beginning who the birth families were, and so that was part of it. But even as reporting continued to reveal who the birth families were, it seemed that there was a lot of mainstream coverage that was uninterested in that aspect of the story.
Yeah. So you start with the three younger children, Devante, Jeremiah, and Sierra. And though their birth mother, Sherry, loved them, she was addicted to crack cocaine, which led her to be an irregular parent. But there were a couple of other more stable options for these children, people they knew and loved and people who loved them. But still, they were taken away and put up for adoption, and eventually they went to the Harts. Can you explain what happened?
The mom, Sherry, as you said, had a drug problem, and so they grew up with their father figure. So he wasn't their biological dad, but he served as a father figure in their lives. And they were removed from him because CPS was worried that the mom was, that he was maybe enabling her drug use. So they went to the aunt, and the aunt's issue was that she asked the birth mom to babysit one day because she didn't have childcare. And a caseworker stopped by and removed the kids immediately when that happened.
I think the thing that I found in your telling of these two very loving, capable people, it didn't seem like CPS or Child Protective Services actually really gave them a fair shake at being the people who could care for the children.
Yeah, I think this story makes it super clear that birth families are treated differently in the child welfare system than adoptive parents are. Jen and Sarah Hart were accused of actual abuse. The kids had bruises. They were being malnourished. There was several different CPS investigations involving that family. But again and again, they got the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, that one mistake that the aunt made cost her these kids forever.
Yeah. And it was also one mistake that the other birth mother of the other three children, Tammy, and the other three children are Marcus, Hannah, and Abigail. She had one misstep and one of her children was bitten by ants at a party. And it seems like that was enough to have Child Protective Services start the process to remove her children.
Yeah. She was also an example of someone who really needed some extra support. But CPS had a very punitive approach towards her as well. The kids were ended up being taken because of medical neglect. And part of that was her inability to find a ride to get her daughter to the hospital.
Yeah, it's like one little thing in the big picture becomes such a momentous thing that the children are removed. Part of what you were doing was reporting on the Texas child welfare system, but also the Texas courts that oversaw the adoption. So these children are removed and then they end up adopted in another state. How did that happen?
So the kids, when they became available for adoption, they went up on a website, the Texas Adoption Resource Exchange, and that is available to people nationally looking for kids. It's difficult to find adoptive families for sibling groups, and so that's part of the reason I think that the Hart women had such a smooth adoption process. The caseworkers really saw this as a win, essentially, that the kids would be sent out of the state, but they would all stay together.
Yeah. And it didn't turn out to be a win, obviously, because as you just pointed out to us a little bit ago, the adoptive mothers were investigated multiple times for abuse of the children, too. There's heart-wrenching parts of your book where the children go knock on their neighbor's door begging for food.
Yeah. Oregon officials found that 5 of the 6 kids were so small that they didn't even land on the growth charts at all. You know, that was a very clear sign that something was wrong, but yet the kids remained with the Hart women.
Yeah. You know, there was one sibling in this story who didn't die. His name was Dante, and he's the sibling of Devante, Jeremiah, and Sierra. And he didn't die because he wasn't adopted. And I think his case in some ways really shows how broken the child welfare system is, which is something, Roxana, I think we hear, you know, the child welfare system's broken, but your book really gives us the intimate detail. And I feel like Dante's story is testament to that. Can you give us the thumbnail of his life?
Sure. So Dante, the oldest, was left behind in foster care. And that's partially because he was old enough when he was removed to realize what was going on. And he started acting out, expressing anger, rage at being removed from his family. And so he was sent to an institution where high behavioral needs foster youth are sent. He experienced abuse there by a staff member. He ended up actually reuniting with his father figure. But by that time, he was 16 years old, and he had been deeply traumatized and harmed by his time in foster care.
And then his own children later end up in foster care. But, you know, one of the things that I found very powerful is you in the book reflect on your own early life, and you say that you and your friends were often left unsupervised with parents who struggled with abuse, mental illness, and substance abuse. But you were never taken away from your home or split apart from your siblings. And you asked, and I'm quoting here, "Why, as a middle-class white person, did I never have to worry about that happening while everyday black families are making decisions with the threat of government intervention looming over them?" I wonder how much, as you did this, your own childhood experiences loomed for you.
They loomed pretty large. It's not that I had a perfect childhood or that I really experienced stability in the home, but I found stability through my community, through my teachers and my friends. And those are things that foster children don't have when they get taken away, not just from their parents, but from their extended families, their schools, you know, their friendships. We remove them from all of that. And those are the things that allow kids to have some resiliency. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that we do foster youth a disservice by taking them not just from their parents, but from their whole communities as well.
Yeah. I want to ask you what you think the birth parents were owed in this really awful situation.
Reporting this story, I ended up telling the mom of Marcus and Hannah and Abigail, I ended up telling that family that their kids had been murdered, because 6 months later, no police officer, no official reached out and told them that. They were owed some dignity and some respect and an understanding that they were grieving just as you would if your kids were murdered, right? There were so many ways that our stigma that we place on birth families who lose their children colored the actions of people to just basically invisibilize them and invisibilize their suffering.
Yeah, maybe it seemed like the system didn't understand that it might have taken their children, but they never stopped loving them.
Exactly. Terminating parental rights is a legal thing. And in the eyes of the law and the officials, that is just a slice down the middle, right? But for a parent, like, parents don't stop being parents just because a piece of paper says they no longer have those rights.
Roxana, after spending so many years with this one story, with these birth families, what do you think we can learn and what needs to change to make things more just?
I think we need to reduce the spread of the child welfare system by really limiting how many kids go in that front door to begin with. There's a huge number of these marginal cases where they're neglect allegations for reasons that look a lot like poverty. Those kids do best, the research says, when they're at home with their parents. And if they can't be with their parents, at least with their family members. We know that kids in foster care really struggle. It's time for us to start limiting the number of kids who have to go through it.
Roxana Askarian's book is We Were Once a Family, A Story of Love, Death, and Child Removal in America. I learned a lot, Roxana. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.